Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by fellow monk Justin, who is here with us to talk about pretty much the foundation of practice as we practice it, the five processes. Welcome, Justin.
Hey, Jen. Thanks a lot.
So one of the reasons I was inspired, Justin, to look at this is that we have a Not What But How retreat coming up. I believe it's next month, and we'll talk about that in a minute, which is a really fabulous way to sink in and kind of get grounded in the five processes. But I thought it would be fun first to just talk a little bit about that. I think it's in the newest book, the Transcending Resistance book, where Sherry says the fact that, you know, in every single one of the books that I've ever written, I go over these five processes just shows you how important it is to practice. So I wonder if you might just kind of run us through what are the five processes and how it benefits practice to really be grounded in those.
Sure, absolutely. So Sherry's been teaching the five processes, I think, for probably, I don't know, how long, 30, 35 years, something like that, and has been also guiding the Not What But How retreat, which is centered around the five processes. So the way I like to look at it is it's sort of, in a lot of ways you could say it's the core of our practice. It's the most essential tools that we use. So it goes like this. The first process is beliefs and assumptions. So we have we're taught to believe and assume things about ourselves, about the world that aren't true. And as we recognize that, we learn how to let go of those beliefs and assumptions and live in a place that is free of those beliefs and assumptions. The second of the five processes is projection. So we learn from projection that the world that we live in is, in a way you could say, is our own creation. You know, we project our own interior reality onto what's outside of us, even onto other people. And that's a very useful tool also in that it teaches us how to trace our experience back to the source, which is inside of us, which is the one place where we can take care of it. Mm-hmm. Then the next one is aspects of the personality or subpersonalities. So when we look at our inner experience, we see that it divides up into these different parts of ourselves. And so I have a part of me who is this one way. I have another part of me who's completely different way, often the opposite points of view. And these parts of ourselves, they each have their own beliefs and assumptions and their own projections. And so it's like having a whole group of people all calling themselves me who are living inside. And then we start to move towards being free of that with the process that we call disidentification. And so it's possible for us to step back from an aspect of personality. And normally, if we're going around and we're suffering, we believe that we are that part of us. And what that part of us believes and projects is completely true. And when we're in that state, we talk about that as being identified with that part of us. We can disidentify, so we can step back and see that, wait a second, that's not me. That's just a part of me. And then that leads directly towards the last process, which we talk about as center. You know, center is the place from which we're not identified in conditioned mind. You know, we're not believing things that aren't true. We're still, I think we have to say we're still projecting, but we're not projecting from these unconscious assumptions that we're making. And we're not acting out of these smaller, separate agendas of these different parts of ourselves, and we're aligned with life. And so there's like a progression that we can go through as we recognize all those parts, all those tools, use all those tools, recognize those processes that are going on that helps us to free ourselves from the suffering and conditioning and live in a larger and happier place.
Well, that is a fabulous summary. Thank you. I'm glad we have that recorded. And, you know, as you're saying that, one of the things that strikes me so much is how it's so Buddhism. Mm-hmm. You know, when one of the things I've always heard about Buddhism is that what it does really well is to bring itself to a particular culture and express itself through whatever's relevant there. So instead of coming in with an ideology and imposing that, it's more a way of being. It's a way of life. And it just comes to wherever its next place is and sort of adapts. And so I know for me, I found practice because I read Sherry's books, and it just, oh my goodness, it spoke so much to me, and it opened my heart to this whole other possibility. And then come to find out, you know, years later, as I was really steeped in it and read some, you know, some old Buddhist things and realized, wait a minute, this exactly the same thing. And so I just think there's such a gift in this practice of taking what is essential Buddhism and offering it to us in these very tangible ways that we can actually practice in our own lives. And I feel like that's kind of what the five processes does for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it really speaks to Sherry's brilliance, too, to marry, you know, ancient Buddhist tradition and modern psychology in that way, and come up with something that, for me, you know, what this practice offers, like you said, is tangible. We talk about the five processes as tools, and they really are tools. It's like we have this tool belt that we can use to dismantle the illusion that we live in inside, that are created by, you know, all these beliefs and assumptions and what we're projecting and all of this. And we can actually take that apart and see what's going on. It's like it's a great big machine, and I've got, if I don't have any wrenches, you know, I don't have any screwdrivers, then I don't have a chance at taking this thing apart and figure out what's going on. But if I have the right tools, I've got a shot at it. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that too. It feels like it actually gives us a way to do it. It's not just theoretical. We can actually end suffering using these tools.
Really true. And I was thinking, you know, as you laid out that really fabulous summary in the beginning, I thought, well, then why do we need to go to the retreat, really? You know, there we have it. We have, in that 3-minute summary that Justin just gave us, we have it. And in a sense, we do. And I mean, that was certainly my experience reading Sherry's books. I think as I read them, I went to the place that we are seeking. You know, I go to that place. But boy, the conditioning that gets thrown in our way to live from that place. Yes, we can, you know, we can resonate with when someone talks about it, we can read books, etc. But it feels to me like then taking that next step and actually kind of metaphorically, literally getting off the couch and practicing, like in the form of coming on retreat, is such a great way to really ground myself in the actual practice of it, to bring that the possibility to life, really.
Yeah, I think you're really on target with that. It feels it's like it has to be experiential, and that's what happens on retreat. You know, like on the Not What the How, it's devoted to the five processes, and so there's a series of experiences that we go through, exercises and like that, that give us these tools in an experiential way. And in addition to that, the tools are not specific to any particular content in life. They're not specific to any a level of experience and practice. You know, we're always using those tools, and so anybody could come to the retreat, no matter whether they're brand new to that to the five processes, or they've been using them for 20 years. And people will bring to the retreat whatever it is they're working on in their lives currently, and apply the tools to that. And so that's how it really becomes experiential. You know, we're having these exercises that help us to understand what these tools are, how to use them. And we're also able to apply them to what is current for us in our lives in a way that can not just teach us about the tools, but also potentially have an effect on what's going on in our lives and what we're working on.
That's really fun. I'm not sure I've ever seen that before, but as you were talking, I just had this image of the meditation hall, you know, where we have our retreat sessions as sort of a laboratory, and we're all together, we're sharing the same tools, and we're each using them at whatever level, whatever place we are in our practice and our lives at that time. And so it's very much individual work. Coming on retreat, you know, is a very inward experience where we have the privileged environment that allows us to really be focused inward. So everyone is working where they're working for themselves. But we also have that incredible benefit of coming together and hearing the insights of what other people are seeing and how it's going for other people, and being able to then apply that back to our own work.
Yeah, it's so true. And now, the other thing about it is these tools are deep. It's not like, okay, you know, like I might think to myself, oh, I understand projection. But then, you know, maybe I'm on a retreat and I hear somebody talking about projection in a way that I've never considered it before, and suddenly it opens a whole new world to me to explore. It just gets deeper and deeper and more subtle and more interesting, actually, as we go along. And I think that's the part in particular that takes, that kind of group work that happens on retreat, because then we can learn from each other and from what other people have seen.
It's so true. How often someone will come in, you know, who's been practicing for 20 years and go, oh, so excited, I got what projection is. That's really fun. Well, Justin, we're just about out of time. Was there anything else you wanted to mention? We probably should mention the dates, huh? So August 17th through the 24th, mm-hmm. not what but how, registration is open. So if people want to join us, they're most welcome. Anything else?
Not that I can think of. Just thanks. Until the next time.
Okay. Thanks for being with us, Justin. Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Justin. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm doing good. That they make that sound really good, don't they?
Yes, they do.
It is. It's really true. It's such great work, and they made so many really good points there. How they made a point about our practice that I think is really significant, and I had the experience that they were kind of pointing at that I hear something, you know, that conversation goes on, and I hear something that I just never thought about that way before. But how practice keeps expanding and deepening as we go along. It's not like it's something that I'm going to learn, and then once I've learned it, that's it. And that experience of, 20 years I've been doing practice, and all of a sudden something, an insight drops in, and I feel like I got it for the first time now. I probably didn't, but it has that feeling. And the power of working with a group of people, all, as was pointed out, all doing individual work, but all doing individual work together with the same tools. It's really an extraordinary experience. And that, again, the point that was made that, people can have the feeling that, I've been doing this for 20 years. I know the five processes, but we don't. We actually don't, because we're different. And the exercises in the retreat are different, and who's there is different, and so it's always a brand new day. That was really fun to listen to.
Yeah, I think for me, as soon as I hear "I know," I can know that I'm in trouble.
yeah, exactly. So I just hope that there are people out, especially anybody who has joined our practice and hasn't gotten that. Those kind of foundational pieces, it would be just really helpful to do that retreat. And also folks who have been around for a while and gotten away from some of the basics. One of the things, we're in an email class right now, and I am so enjoying where this particular class is, class four, hearing from people at various stages in practice, reading the responses and seeing how people are applying the very tools that Justin and Jen were just talking about and other tools of practice, and really transforming their lives as a result of doing that. And it's just so... it's thrilling for me and heartening, because there's a lot of suffering in the world. And as Justin was pointing out, these are tools that anybody can take and learn and use and apply in their lives to move toward ending that that suffering that's so prevalent in the world. So. That was really good. I appreciate that.
Great. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this is a common experience, but when I write into the email class, it feels like the process of writing, I guess it would be similar to sharing in group, is that's when it all kind of comes together, when there's kind of an expression of what I've been seeing.
Yes. Yeah, the Sangha aspect of it is just outrageous, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And I said at the beginning of this particular class, I think it goes out regularly, that this class, more than any other, people should just read the responses, because it is such a disidentification exercise you know, people are talking about coming back to the breath and opening up, and their heart opens, and they you know, you just, you know, you read a page of those, and if you haven't disidentified, read another page, because it's on its way. And
yeah.
that's that feeling of being with Sangha, and that's why it's so important for us who are, you know, in the position of offering practice, come up with as many ways as we can for people to get together and practice together, because it's that support of other people's practice that really lights a fire under our own practice. And of course, as ours takes off, then that's of assistance to others, and it's just a whole wonderful working together sort of magic thing.
Yes, that's my experience.
Yeah. I bet you have announcements.
How did you guess? This week is the last chance to register for I Don't Want To, I Don't Feel Like It on the East Coast.
Ooh.
And this retreat, as you know, is facilitated by you and Ashwini, and
mm-hmm.
based on your latest book.
Mm-hmm. And a phenomenal retreat, if I do say so myself.
Great.
Yeah, I really hope people will take advantage of it who can. Now, it's an advanced retreat, so not everybody, you know, is going to qualify, only in the sense that it's basically what we were just talking about. If people don't have the building blocks, then by the time they get to this retreat, you know, they're just going to be lost in the terminology, if nothing else. And actually, Ashwini and I were just talking about this yesterday or sometime. Next year, we want to do a Northeast retreat and a Asheville retreat that will just be on a more general theme, maybe the Eightfold Path or something like that, that everybody can participate in. But if there are old timers out there, this is definitely one to get to, because this is where practice is currently. This is the, you know, the kind of the latest version of practice, how we're talking about it now, how we're expressing it, explaining it, and the exercises that we're offering to assist people in having the experiences that we're talking about. So,
great.
Get there. Yeah.
Great. And what you practice is what you have will be one of the last chances to visit the monastery this season. And that's at the end of September.
That's true. Wow. Coming right on up, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Oh. And this retreat is the 8-day follow-up to There Is Nothing Wrong With You, facilitated by Sherry and Ashwini, and it will help you see your life through a completely different lens.
Yes. It is a riotous good time.
So visit schedule.livingcompassion.org to find out more and to sign up for any of these events. Our call-in number is 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. The show ID is 15406, and then you'd press £1 or your PIN followed by pound. And I want to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
And, Michael, before you call on the first person, I want to do a little commercial announcement here.
Okay.
I know that it has become popular to call into the show and just listen to the show. And that's great. You know, I'm really happy for people to participate in whatever way. But if we get to the point where everybody just wants to call in and listen, and people are not stepping up and taking their turn at, speaking and offering their practice for other people's benefit and their own, then we'll have to address that, because it is a call-in show, and it is a Sangha opportunity. It's a time when we can get together people who live very far away and don't have a chance to get together regularly. And when we're at group at the monastery, you know, we ask that people participate, not just come and sit and listen, but also participate in that, speak up and say what's going on, and be facilitated and make each of us make our practice available for everyone else. So that's just a little encouragement, a reminder. I know it can be scary. I know it gets the old heart pounding to think about talking on the show. And I also know that there are a lot of old timers who don't actually have that experience. And so everybody knows who you are. So let's all pitch.
Great. Wonderful. Thanks for that reminder.
Mm-hmm.
And here we go.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Judy.
Well, hello, Judy.
Howdy.
What's going on?
Let's see. So many things.
Where to begin?
Exactly. I am in the email class.
You are?
And I noticed, yes.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed that, I think you spoke about this another time, that we have all of those facets within us.
Uh-huh.
And that was fascinating, because when I did the test, I didn't think that was true. I thought, oh, I'm just one of these.
Right. Now, when you did the test, so for people who aren't in the email class, we're talking about the Enneagram, when you did the test, were you just kind of way out there in front on one type, or were there a couple of types that sort of were neck and neck?
Very strong in one, and then medium in another.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you read other people's responses?
I do. And when I first saw them, I thought, oh, there was just too many to read. I felt a little overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. It is overwhelming. It is overwhelming. It's a lot. You know, it's like picking up a rather thick novel. But I was wondering if,
exactly,
as you read through, you can recognize in what the other types say parts of you that, I feel that way. I could, you know, that could describe me on a given day or.
Definitely. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Some more than,
yeah,
others. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
It was a spectrum, and I related to, a lot of them.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Good. I'm not going to ask you what type you are, because that would be wrong. So I'm not going to ask you.
And the other thing I noticed was that suddenly it's unrelated. I restarted meditation, which had fallen off the table somewhere several months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because there was some pseudo Zen about I should.
Mm.
And this,
yeah,
time, it's different. There's no conversation about, is it good for me, or what would a good person do? You know, it was just, I just like to be with myself.
Yes, exactly. It's just a lovely way to sit down with a very fine human being and have a human being experience of whatever a human being is experiencing. You know, if we just thought about it as a way to relax, to practice paying attention, you know, to be with the body, to be with the breath, to just notice. If people could get out of the grip of the voices long enough to just realize that that's what meditation is, that's what we're doing in meditation, it would be something that people, I think, would race to rather than, of course, the karmic conditioning always attempts to put anything good for us in the should column, because we then are geared to resist anything we should do.
Okay.
Right? So you should eat well. You should get enough sleep. You should drink enough water. You should.
I should be nice to so-and-so.
Yeah. And you shouldn't eat sugar and all of that. And then when we turn into resistant little teenagers or whatever, we feel like we've pulled one over on someone. You know, we've gotten away with something. I'm a rebel. I you know, I'm not going to do what I'm told to do. Failing to notice that what I'm not doing is all of the things that I actually want to do to take care of myself.
Wow.
So if we stick with the, actually, I want to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to do that. Then, if you don't meditate every day, it's kind of a, oh shoot, I didn't get to meditate today. Darn. Instead of the, you know, the drama. You should.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
Yeah.
I'm too tired. I don't feel like it. Yeah, but then blah 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 blah. Say what?
I was going to say that could be applied to pretty much anything, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to
exercise. I want to take good care of my body. I want to eat well. I want to get enough sleep. You know, I want to live a long and healthy life. I want to do that. It's not a should. I want to.
Mm-hmm.
I actually don't want to eat sugar because I've noticed that it makes me feel like yuck.
Yeah. Interesting.
And, of course, if I haven't noticed it makes me feel like yuck, then great. Although I might want to pay attention because there's almost nobody in the world now who doesn't call it kind of the number one poisoner of humanity at this point.
Great.
Yeah. So, make a little list of the things that you want to do, and then try not to be too disappointed when you don't get to do them, but definitely make the I want to's the top on your to-do list.
Yeah. Because for me, the to-do list has been written by conditioning in the past.
Yes.
Not me.
And, right. And it's written so that all the things you want to do never get done, right? So that's, we joke about that all the time. You know, as soon as I decide that I'm going to take up meditation practice, all those things that I never wanted to do, you know, clean out the closet and detail the car and, you know, make sure all of my shoes are, go to the shoe repair, you know, those become high priority items. Yeah. And so if we just put on the top of the to-do list all of the things that take care of me, I make sure I get through those every day, even if I don't get to anything else, be a happy human.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for checking in. Don't be a stranger, okay?
Yeah. Okay. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Judy. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Judy. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry and Michael. It's Jodine.
Hi.
Well, hello, Jodine. How are you?
Hi. Very proud to say that I just accomplished my one of my commitments for my first week of Zen Awareness Coaching, which is to call the show and check in.
Good for you, because I had noticed that you were among those we had not heard from in a while.
Yes. Yeah. Well, because I haven't called for a while, of course, a lot of stuff and content has gone on in my life. And I have to say, unfortunately, I have been very ill. And that is kind of weird. I've been very ill, and I've had commitments that were traveling. I had two trips, basically, to the East Coast. But anyhow, as I kind of landed back in California, I have been in really, really dire straits. It feels like I have been, hounded by conditioning, and I have been, using the tools I can, like almost like clinging to them like a life raft, but feeling like I'm slipping off. So I shared with you before that it appears clear that most of what I'm dealing with right now is Parkinson's disease. And it is basically somebody told me who also has Parkinson's disease was projecting a lot onto me about his experience, but saying, you know, this is the biggest challenge you will face in your life, almost certainly. And at first it didn't feel like that. But the changes in my body that the illness is making, because it causes physical changes in my body. Mm-hmm. And then the changes in my life are slow. So it's a slowly degenerative illness.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to a certain point with it, and felt like I had somewhere to stand, you know, and then that gets blown away, you know,
yeah.
The next week.
Well, here, just before we go on, one thing that I would say to you about his assessment of your situation. I've known you for a long time, and I think you'd have actually a challenge figuring out the greatest challenge, because you've been through some challenges.
Well, that is true, and thank you for acknowledging that.
Yeah. So, I mean, if somebody's going along and this happens, I mean, yes, this is, this is God-awful. This is what the kind of thing we all hope doesn't happen. But it's not happening to someone who hasn't faced a great deal already and doesn't have a very deep practice. So, yes, it can feel like you're clinging to a life raft and it may be slipping out of your grasp, but the fact that you can articulate that says that you are in a much better position than those voices would have you believe. And may I take just a moment here to do a commercial announcement for people who don't yet realize how unbelievably, hideously hateful those voices are, that they would happily jump on somebody in this kind of life circumstance and try to make her life worse.
Yeah.
It's ugly, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Actually, well, there's a lot that I've seen, but in that vein, conditioning was quiet for about a day, after the kind of final trip to the final doctor who said, I'm sorry, but this is Parkinson's disease. You know, there was this resounding silence. And then the next day I was at work and my work goes really smoothly when I'm very present to it. And I was kind of in the groove and, you know, just really focused on my work, which I enjoy. And literally in the silence of that, you know, no talk in the head, just doing a task, it literally whispered, Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease.
It whispered
Parkinson's disease.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that was all.
Yeah. So cruel.
Yeah. So, but you know, it's, I think, it's interesting that the first thing that came to your mind was, you know, what I've been through, up to now, because there was an awareness that kind of just, I don't know, I felt like I was held in this awareness initially, that somehow, you know, like if I had to, if I was designing someone's life, and I knew that at the age of 46, they were going to get this news, kind of like, what kind of a life would I want them to have, like, that could somehow, in some way, prepare them to get that news with some degree of equanimity, some feeling of adequacy, of being equal to this. And I realized, well, you know, look at my life.
Mm-hmm. I've had that life.
Yeah. and so I don't know. There was some, well, number one, I mean, there was the comfort of feeling adequate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like standing there and realizing and not realizing what is ahead of me, and feeling like, you know, I can do this. There's somebody inside, you know, amazingly. I don't know, you know, stood up or raised her hand or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the female class, I just wrote the other day that line about, you know, this is the kind of thing, this is why we practice. This is the kind of situation that we're practicing for. Because sooner or later,
right,
we're all going to get there. And not paying attention and ignoring and indulging voices of self-hate and just hoping somehow it's going to get better someday is not the preparation that's going to serve us when it hits the fan, which it's going to do.
Right.
But it doesn't make it any easier.
Yeah, it's like I'm dealing a lot with a part of me who says, like, couldn't I just have a little time off?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the new book, you talk about, you know, time off from practice. And it's, I mean, it's just not, like, it's really ugly if I try to go that route.
Yeah.
I feel like I am, you know, it's like I'm walking a line and there's insanity, like, on one side of that line, and you know, letting go of the things that I'm doing every day to support myself is how I, you know, teeter over and fall on that side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing that to me gets most real about all of this is that when we're going along and, you know, it's okay. It's okay. It's fine. You know, am I as happy as I wish I would? No, but I'm not that unhappy either. You know, it's okay. When we're in that stage, we're willing to sacrifice the human being to that level of, well, low-level suffering.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Because if I really try to practice, if I really try to wake up, if I try to put this suffering, self-hating stuff out of business, it's going to get ugly. And I don't want to go through that. So I'll just feed it. I'll just give it enough of my life that it doesn't demand any more.
Mm-hmm.
And that amounts to sacrificing that person to that life. And now, with what you're facing, you know the consequences of sacrificing that human being to this. And you've got to come through for her with everything you've got, or she's lost.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what I'm up to.
That's what I'm doing with my summer vacation?
What I did with my summer vacation.
Oh, Lord.
That's 50 words.
Oh, Lord. Well, here's the deal, girl. You got to stay in touch.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? This is why we have Sangha. Sangha's great when everything is just cranking along, and it's really great when the need for support reaches these kinds of levels.
Yeah, I promise I'll stay in touch, and I'll call every month.
Good, and I'm really glad you've got yourself a coach. Good job there.
Yeah. Yeah, we just got started, and we're off and away.
Yeah, good, good. All right.
Okay.
Take good care of yourself.
Much.
All right. Good
Thank
night,
you.
Nadine.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jodine. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. That just makes me want to hold hands, Sherry.
Oh, God. Oh, it so does. Yeah. It's just, it's all so very, very fragile and fleeting and, All right. Well, I bet you've got somebody we're supposed to hear from, huh?
Yes. And that is our sponsor right now. And then we'll be right back.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Valerie.
Well, hello, Valerie. Now, there's a voice from my past.
I know.
How are you?
I'm dealing with the 2x4s, but I'm feeling okay. I'm calling in because of the tweets and just being out on that island, I guess. I'm really, I read a Rumi quote that said something like, if you're, be grateful for the blows from heaven, I guess, because it said something like that, and I'm trying to be grateful for the blows,
and you're trying to convince yourself they're from heaven?
I guess so.
Uh-huh. So what's going on?
I guess I don't feel fear calling in, and I don't feel urgency to say something like I usually did in the past, where I'd start talking really fast. So that's different. And I guess I'm checking in, and I'm starting to listen to the radio show again. And I like this. Don't feel or this conversation of not feeling bad, where you just no repeats.
No postmortem.
I have a lot of physical sensations going along with panic and anxiety for the shoulds and the stuff. Nothing new, but. I don't know. I just had to call in because I'm so grateful for the tweets and the radio show, and I'm not participating as much as I used to, so I just had to call in for some reason.
Okay, so you kind of haven't been around for a while, and now you're back on board, sounds like, and so you're checking in to let us know you're there.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that. Because, I talk about this with some regularity, but it's such a way that karmic conditioning scams people is through that, oh, well, you're not that important. You don't matter. Nobody cares if you're around. And so people hear that, they don't go to their sitting group, or they don't call the radio show, or they don't come to a retreat or a workshop or whatever it is. And ceasing to believe that is such a critical part of practice, because it's just not true. We do, as a Sangha, we count on everybody. And, people will project onto me, well, yeah, I mean, I know thousands and thousands people. I mean, I'm not going to remember this little person out there in the Dakotas somewhere. Come on. That's what I do. And we all do. So we hear from somebody and get a sense of their life and their practice and what they're working on, and then they fall off the radar. And it's like there's just a hole there where that person used to be. So, we don't want to take that as a pressure, because God knows there are enough shoulds and pressures already. But just to have that realization that, yeah, actually each and every one of us is an important part of the whole. We are.
Yeah.
And I think it's easier to sustain those blows and to be cheerful about them when we have a group of people who we know are also going through similar circumstances as ours.
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit lost in the new language, but I'm trying to catch up here a little bit.
Oh, tell me what it is, and I'll try to translate.
Just talking about the last open air when they're talking about the good news updates, talking about the new language where it's like I'm drawing a blank even, but it's like but you are participating in being unconscious, so, and innocence is not quite the right word.
Yes. Now, have you read the new book? I don't want to. I don't feel like it.
I have read the book. I just haven't done the exercises like usual. Oh gosh.
Aha. Uh-huh. So you have a lot of books that you can go back through and do exercises if you ever have a really cold snap there in the wilds of the Dakotas, right? So anyway, yes. Shall we talk about that? Or was that just an example of something that you realize is going on and you're not quite up to speed, but you're confident you're going to get up to speed as time goes on?
Well, I just feel a little bit like you've moved past something in practice where it's like the small child, where you really got to be there for the small child. You really have to. And not move past something in practice, but moved into a new way of talking about it.
We kind of did. In the sense that there was a lot of confusion that this is the way it would go. So I'm going along just innocently in my life, and then I work in a bakery, and I just burned 30 loaves of bread because I got all involved in text messages and I forgot to check the oven. But it was innocent, right? And then the boss comes in and starts yelling, and here's this little kid who feels really bad and beat up and yelled at because, you know, she didn't mean to do it. Can you picture it?
Yep.
And so what the point that's being made is, it wasn't innocent. What happened is I, the one who's supposed to be taking responsibility for this life, I went unconscious. I fell asleep. I got all involved in text messages, and I forgot all about the fact that I'm getting paid to watch the ovens and make sure the bread doesn't burn. Then, when somebody started yelling at me, or I smelled the bread burning, whichever came first, what happens is that everybody bails out, right? So the person who is lost in the text messages, the person who took the job, the person who draws the paycheck, everybody just takes off and leaves this little kid. So now I'm about 3 years old, and this big person probably has a red face and is screaming and yelling at me, and I'm terrified and I feel awful. Then what people conclude is, what I need to do is take care of that little kid who is so upset. You with me on that one?
Yeah.
Yeah? But that misses the point. Huh?
I'm following.
Okay. But that really misses the point, because that child should not have been there in the first place. And the child certainly shouldn't have been abandoned to take the wrath of the boss when such a giant debacle happened. So what I need to do, what I need to do is show up to be the employee who is doing my job and paying attention. And then if something happens, it truly was an accident, because I didn't go unconscious. I wasn't not paying attention. I was right there and something happened. And I'm going to stand right there and say, yeah, that happened and I could have done that differently, or I didn't think of that, or, you know, it's either I was complicit, or it was an accident, whatever it was. But there isn't a little child left to try to deal with an adult situation.
Yeah.
The little kids at home playing with the stuffed animals.
Yeah, it makes me feel like maybe when I first listened to that, I feel like a little twist of guilt and just kind of, and then I remember not, you know, feeling bad for Ezekiel, not to do that. And
right.
Perked up a little bit, and just trying to follow the conversation after that was even more confusing a little bit. I can't even really remember. But maybe that's just me going unconscious when I was trying to
The thing about it is, what we have to keep in mind is egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is going to use everything against us that it can possibly get its hands on, right? So in the previous conversation, somebody gets diagnosed with a really terrible condition, and that system, egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate, is right there to make it as much worse as possible. So we know that. So, of course, you know, if you're going to look at this this current conversation and go, oh, okay, well, that's right. I want to practice staying present so that none of these innocent aspects of the personality get abandoned in bad situations. It's going to come in and try to take that awareness away from you, because practicing that would help you to be free. And it's devoted to suffering.
Yeah. I think this will be good to listen to again and try and take it all in again. I'm excited to listen to this again, and I, in the past, in the very, very early years of trying to contact you, I didn't re-listen to the radio shows because I had so much conditioning against it, but I have what it takes right now within me to re-listen to this and to keep listening. I wish I could be in on the Thursday nights now that I'm coming up to speed. You've got Thursday nights now, learning to learn. Boy, oh boy, that just made my heart sing when I heard that was going on.
Uh-huh.
And I'm happy that's happening, and I'm sorry I'm missing out on this year, pretty much. It feels like I opted out at the wrong time when I was at the weakest. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. I'm just talking.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying, or I'll project onto what you're saying, and that is that you got kind of hoodwinked into falling off the practice wagon right at a time when you could have really enjoyed and benefited from all of the things that we're doing this year. So, and now you're back, and this is very good. Yeah?
Yep.
All right. Very, very good. And it's great to hear from you. Stay in touch, please. Listen to it again. And if it doesn't make sense or if there's some part of it you don't get, call me.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Valerie. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to break for an important message, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The year of deepening practice has produced a new support opportunity for people of all levels of practice. A team of Zen awareness coaches guided by Sherry Huber, who offer individual coaching to support awareness practice. This coaching program is designed to help strengthen the inner voice of self-compassion and peace, and places a special emphasis on recording and listening. Whether you're brand new or a long-timer, awareness coaching can be the extra support your heart desires. As the Buddha said, we must each work out our own salvation diligently. Zen awareness coaches can assist you wherever you are in your practice. For more information, visit sanghamarket.com. Look for the Little Zen Monk under the Services section. These services are offered with loving kindness to support those wishing to deepen their practice.
Welcome back to Open Air. And we have another caller, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Margaret from Bishop, California.
Oh, hello, hey. Margaret. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks.
Good. What's going on?
Well, I was calling just to ask, just to get some feedback about a couple of the upcoming fall retreats. I initially am interested in, and actually have signed up for What You Practice is What You Have.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also kind of interested in the precepts retreat. And I was talking to my awareness coach about it, and he suggested, well, maybe you could just do the first step and just sort of inquire about the precepts retreat and just kind of, you know, get some feedback about, you know, what is our process for, you know, being considered for that. And I did send, I actually signed up for the What You Practice, and I sent an email to information, you know, about the precepts retreat about a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't heard back yet, and so I thought, well, I'm just going to call into the show and have a conversation.
There you go. There you go. That's always a good plan. So with the precepts, one of the things that is important to us, now, it's not important to everybody, so I'm not going to say that this is important to Buddhists. But what's important to us is that a person really understand what it is that we're doing with the precepts. So for a long time, we have arranged it so that people can come to the precepts retreat. Now, at the end of the precepts retreat, people are given an opportunity to accept the precepts or take the precepts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a kind of a formal sort of a process that people go through. But people can come to the retreat, go all through the retreat, and they can actually decide that they don't want to take the precepts if it goes in that direction for them. But it's an opportunity to find out what the precepts are and why we take them and what they are in Buddhism and all of that sort of thing. We encourage people to practice long enough that they feel themselves really ready to make a commitment, because that's what we're really doing in taking the precepts. Now, it's not a commitment to this practice. It's a commitment to practice.
So it's really a statement that I'm committing my life to waking up and ending suffering. And I'm committing to use these this perspective to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to compare it to marriage, you know, that a lot of people are quite happy just living with somebody or just being in a relationship with somebody. And then sometimes people get to the place where they really kind of want to make a public statement about the whole thing. You know, they want to step up there and say that this is who I am, and this is what I'm doing, and this is what's important to me. And so the precepts ceremony is much like that. And
mm-hmm.
you understand what I mean?
I do. And I have read most of the Precepts Retreat book that you have published.
Uh-huh.
So I, you know, based on practicing and then also, you know, having read that, I was like, I think I do really understand what you mean.
So it's a big step in
mm-hmm.
the same way that anything that we take seriously is a big step, because we talk about in practice endlessly, of course, the devotion that egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate has in keeping us from waking up and from ending suffering. And so we don't want it to be something that somebody does kind of impetuously or, you know, very inspired, and then down the road it gets turned over to karmic conditioning to torture them with.
Yeah, and I conditioning can definitely do that.
It's so talented.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that kind of has prompted me to just even move forward to having this conversation is that, you know, in reading the book and just, you know, considering sort of where I am with practice, is that it definitely resonated with my heart on,
mm-hmm.
and then at the same time, conditioning is very, you know, afraid of doing it because of, you know, projecting a lot of, well, what it might mean or how that will change my life or what I'll be required
mm-hmm.
to do, or, you know, maybe mm-hmm. not ready, or all, you know, all these.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like a place of, like, conditioning is paying attention. Like, oh,
yeah.
this is a...
Yeah, don't do that.
There's something here. So
yeah.
Look the other
yeah.
way.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. You haven't done what you practice.
I haven't.
And you haven't done transcending resistance?
No. I've taken two of the email classes, and, you know, the two email classes on resistance, and I've done Time to Feel Good and the Enneagram classes, and I participated in the DPAP last year and the Learning to Love Learning, and so I've taken There's Nothing Wrong with You. That was 2 years ago, and I didn't register in time last year to take it, and so this year I was like, as soon as it came out, I registered, and then thought, well, now I'll have the conversation about which one to go do.
Well, since that's where you are in practice, it might be good to get a couple of those other practice retreats under your belt, and then look at precepts. Some of those retreats will probably go away over time. Precepts retreat.
Yeah, that occurred to me too, because I've heard.
Yeah.
Noises already that the, you know, what you practice might not
yeah.
be on the agenda forever.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it might come back in, you know, in a couple of years or 3 years or whatever, but it's not going to be, because we have new things that we only have so much time on the schedule. So, that would be my encouragement. And it is probably true that at some point you're going to have to face this precept thing, because it's clearly already shaking conditioning. So we know when that happens.
Yeah, you know, one thing my coach pointed out was is that my Learning to Love Learning project is self-care.
Uh-huh.
And sort of the reminder was that I'm really – you know, I could choose to do self-care as a hobby, or I can choose to do it as as, you know, deep self-care. And, of course, that's what I am after. And not just it as a hobby, because it's you know, as a hobby, it's I mean, it's practicing as a hobby, and that is not as fulfilling, or, you know, it doesn't really get to the heart of suffering.
Yeah. Yes. And in fact, that's
ending
a,
suffering.
Yeah, that's a real of mine, and I can't remember if I just wrote a blog, but I've been thinking about writing a blog. But the whole notion that it's very prevalent in our consumer society, just to do enough awareness practice to be able to live a more comfortable egocentric life, and.
Yeah.
You know, that when I say it like that, it can sound judgmental, and that actually is not what I mean. If I were a person who was given to fear, it would frighten me. And we talked earlier in the show about exactly why, because the odds are very good that there are rough, deep waters ahead. And if we use practice just to make egocentric karmic conditioning more comfortable, then we are setting ourselves up not to have the greatest support that we could have in life when things get difficult. And that makes me sad. So I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for all the practice opportunities that are available.
Well, you are so welcome. Thank you for availing yourself of them.
And it looks like I will see you at What You Practice Is What You Have.
All right. That's very good. Thank you.
Thank you so
good
much.
Night.
Good night.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us, Margaret. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Another blessed show, Sherry.
Another one, Michael. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry.
Bye.
Bye.